Thanks, Rhonda. Well, hello everyone. So you need to find a screen you can see, and I'll try and wave my arms a little bit. Today, or as of June, consumer confidence is at 90.7. It's the lowest consumer confidence that we've had since about 1991. So after a series of interest rate hikes, petrol price increases, and lots of concern about what's going on in the financial community, Australia's sort of worried about the economy and worrying what's happening to us. But we have to put all of this into perspective, and I've been asked to talk about fads and real trends. So, you know, far be it from me to say that the economy is a fad, but it is something that we do need to put into perspective. And if we look at it, the last decade has been one of increasing affluence, increasing wealth, increased spending and saving. Times have been really good. So we have to put all of our thinking in terms of trends into that longer context. So 10 years ago, Roy Morgan Research and a whole bunch of other people who were trying to foresee what was going to happen in the future were talking about the changes that we'd expect to see as a result of the women's movement, which is definitely not a fad. The women's movement is here to stay. So women working and being more involved in all areas of society. People, and including us, were talking about the trends that would happen as a result of new technology. We knew that we'd be able to see more and engage more in what was happening internationally. And there were a whole range of things that we knew were going to happen. But now, 10 years later, I'm sort of really fortunate to work at Roy Morgan Research because we measure this stuff and we can actually see what's really happened and get a handle on what's happening in the world and therefore how people are feeling, what they're likely to do, and what's sort of likely to happen. And as Rhonda said, you know, are the community values where we think they are, or is there something very different going on? So we look at the world, or all of these trends that we measure, because there's billions of them, in terms of societal trends, trends in technology, trends relating to the economy, those relating to politics, and the last round we've added the environment as a whole new issue. So we look at it in terms of these key things. So very simply, the first important thing to realise, and we all know this, is the ageing population, so that we can see that Australians are getting older or there are more people in that over 50 age group. We're also seeing this figure in terms of education. Now that's really interesting. 10 years ago, 15% of people had a tertiary qualification. Now it's running at 22%. That has huge implications for the way people see the world, the kind of work they're engaged in, and just generally the level of awareness and ability to understand what's going on. So that is a really big change. I said there was rising wealth, rising affluence, rising confidence, but we really have seen dramatic increases in spending, saving and debt over the last 10 years. And we've also seen Australians engaging with finance in a way that we never have before, all thinking about planning for the future, thinking about borrowing to invest, to save. It's a real phenomenon that's relatively new to this country, something that you would have seen in America. You know, I remember when I went to America, I was visiting people in their office. They weren't doing work. They were actually looking at the stock market. It was so much a part of their life. We're seeing much more of that in Australia at the moment. We're also seeing shrinking households. So there are fewer and fewer large households and more smaller households. Function of a whole bunch of things, a function of, you know, women putting off having children. It's a function of affluence, so people can afford their own home. A whole bunch of things conspiring to create these smaller households also has implications for are there enough houses for people, and you get all of the things about housing affordability, and you get things about people not living in larger groups. But just these are the sorts of trends. And, you know, it's interesting, you look at these charts and they look sort of relatively flat, but it's important to think this is a 10-year trend. They're based on over 50,000 interviews every year. So it's a little bit like, you know, climate change or global warming. Just one percentage increase in the temperature makes a huge difference. So these numbers, although they're not big jumps and everything, they're very real, they're very solid, and they're really, measuring fundamental changes in society. There's real growth also in employment now. We all know with good times we've had a reduction in unemployment. That's pretty obvious. But the flip side of that is there are simply more people employed. There are more people employed full-time. There are more people employed part-time. There are more people that were working part-time now working full-time. There were more people who weren't even looking for work that have found themselves dragged into work. So there's a lot more people working, which means a lot less leisure time, a lot less time to do other things. And that's the flip side of this. This is really important. So economically, a government will actually see as its KPI full employment. The flip side of it is that bit that's missing from the leisure, the caring time, the other stuff that goes on in people's lives. So this chart is also a really important chart for us to see. The other thing that we've seen, and this may be surprising to some of you, it was surprising to me when I first saw it, but I've sort of swallowed it and understood it. Over the last 10 years, Australia has become a lot more socially progressive. So when we ask people, do you consider yourself to be socially progressive or socially traditional or conservative, increasingly people are saying that they see themselves as more progressive. We're also seeing that people are more interested in new things. So they're wanting to try new things. And people often say, well, isn't that just because of the good times? You know, when the economy's booming, everyone's got money in their pocket, of course they want new things. But this is a lot more fundamental. It's more about people being willing to engage with new ideas and take on board new concepts. So again, the lines aren't going charging up through the ceiling, but these are sort of deep values. They do, I think, relate to education, but it's interesting they're coming through. They're permeating the data in a number of different directions. Similarly, of course, if we're getting more progressive, we're getting less conservative. And we're seeing fewer people, although still a large number, saying that religion should be taught in government schools. And we're seeing fewer people agreeing that women should take care of their homes and leave running the country to men. When we first began asking that question in 1983, it ran around 20%. So we're living in the right age. That is the single most difficult question that we ask. Every week we go out and we ask, you know, people around Australia a whole bunch of questions. You know, how much money they earn, who they're going to vote for, where their bank account is. The one that creates the problem is this question. We often get women, particularly, ringing up radio stations and saying, how dare you ask this question? But it's really important because we've actually been able to track this view over more than 20 years to find that it's actually tapering off. And by the way, they're not just old men in that 7%. We're also seeing this issue of progressiveness taking over a whole range of areas like acceptance of the environmental movement, people wanting to do good things for the environment, an open-mindedness about homosexuality, and a more open-minded view about technology. So the whole progressive thing is a very all-encompassing thing that we're actually seeing growing within Australian society. We're also seeing some interesting stuff around food. So this really relates to the changes that we're seeing in our society. Obviously, there are many more Asians these days than there were. I think it's around running about 8% of Australians born in Asia. It was around 2% some 10, 15 years ago. So there are changing multicultural issues within Australia. And what we're seeing is that, you know, we thought we were so cool when we took to Chinese food, but that's now actually giving way to the new cuisines of the new countries that are actually coming into Australia. So we are, in fact, by just watching the food that we prefer to eat, we're seeing a change in the way that we view society. Also in terms of food, we see people's concern about health and fitness and weight and everything. So in terms of health and weight, what we've seen over the last 10 years is really, I think, an issue of weight and health, again, coming to a really sensible balance. We've got a bunch of people who are always going to be watching their weight. We've moved away, I think, from fad diets. when we look at our consumer data in terms of what they eat, we're actually seeing people moving away from crazy diet things to much more focus on health, well-being. Things like genetically modified food is probably one of those things that turns out to be almost like a fad, where people really worry about it for some time and then the worry goes away. But so we can see, even in terms of health and well-being, that this is a sort of a societal trend. Despite all of that, we're not getting any thinner. So we're all sort of, the number of us that are an acceptable weight is on the downturn. So it seems to be something that we'll all be worrying about for some time. Now, this chart is a really, looks like spaghetti. It's a difficult one to follow. But it's actually really, really important. When we ask people about the activities that they engage in, we ask these questions for a whole range of reasons. We ask them because people at sporting clubs want to have members. We ask them because we need to understand the latest fad. Is it cricket or is it going to be skiing or what is it? So the questions come from a whole range of different places. But when you put it together into a picture like this, there's two themes that come out. There is a move here away from organised and family gatherings. So that the time when people would have a sort of gather their family together and go for a family drive, we're moving away from that. We're moving away from organised, planned activities to much more individualistic pursuits. So going to the gym, you do it in your own time for your own self, you don't need to worry about other people, is taking over from organised sport. So there's this move towards individual rather than group, and in your own time rather than planned. And the other thing that's coming through is the move online, the move towards engaging in activities that are actually happening in front of a computer screen in sort of virtual space rather than engaging with people. And these are very important social issues rather than just technology issues. I mean, people like our clients like Telstra and Optus are interested in these things because they're interested in providing services that support the trends in society. In this room today, we need to actually understand what do these trends mean in terms of the people, in terms of the larger societal issues. So in terms of technology itself, what have we seen? Pretty obvious changes going on. We're actually seeing things like a move away from having the phone connected at home. See that top line there? We're seeing a move away from home phones, a move towards mobile phones, a move towards personalised music, listening to things that you want to listen to. So when I first joined Roy Morgan in 1983, we were measuring the number of households that had a phone because we needed to catch up with, you know, we wanted to monitor home phone penetration, the extent to which everyone was connected to the phone. About 10 years ago, we stopped measuring home phone penetration because everyone had one. It's changed now. Now the issue is to track it as it dissipates. The issue is no longer connectivity with the household, it's actually connectivity with individuals. The whole notion that you can contact a person wherever they are, not necessarily at home. And again, it's more of this individualisation rather than a family connection. You know, you don't actually know when your daughter's boyfriend rings. You don't take the call and say, it's Fred on the phone. It all just happens. You've got no idea. That's only one of the consequences, but an important one, I can assure you. So we're also seeing this major issue in terms of music, 3G, and all of those things. So entertainment, engagement with news, etc., is we're really seeing this move towards people choosing what they want to listen to, choosing what they want to engage with. And I jumped on the tram the other day. I was running late for work. I usually walk. Jumped on the tram. And the first thing that struck me was I was the only person that didn't have things in my ears. And I actually felt like a weirdo because everyone else was actually engaged in whatever it was they were listening to. And, you know, the young ones, I could actually hear what they were listening to through their earphones. But you know, the point really is that they were all on their own, yet stuck into this tram. So that's what we're seeing in terms of a lot of the technology. We also look at media consumption. And the chart here is basically showing that things like television are still ubiquitous. You know, the majority of us are still watching television. The majority of us are still reading newspapers. We're still listening to radio. It's tapering off a little bit. I think radio is probably suffering more with things like iPods and that stuff on demand than many of the other forms of media. But we do definitely see that big line creeping right up there, being the internet taking over. So the internet is really charging into all of these media spaces. And of course, even within television, we've got fragmentation. You know, you can no longer actually sort of put a message of any kind on major TV, free-to-air TV on Sunday night, and get everyone. It just doesn't work that way. But we are still engaging in watching television. We're also seeing interesting things going on in the way that technology is changing the way that we interact with all sorts of services. Briefly, we were hearing about banking and these issues. So what we've seen here is we've seen visiting a branch is down now to less than 50%. So less than 50% of people will have visited a branch in the last 4 weeks. Using an ATM, obviously one of the most common ways that people will interface with a bank. Phone banking, that yellow line, was going up, 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 and then started to taper off as the internet and internet banking is taking over. So it's quite clear that there are real changes going on. There are social implications, but there are also pretty fundamental implications. I mean, banks don't just do this stuff. Banks respond to consumer demand as well as the profit motive. So banks are only one example, had to really work out what do consumers want, how do they want to engage with them. And what we really are seeing is that there are a large number of people who would prefer not to have to go to a branch, who'd prefer not to have to wade through dealing with a youngster at the counter who's really sweet and could be my daughter, but she really doesn't know anything about what I'm trying to talk to her about. I would rather go online and sort it out myself. So there's a lot of the community that feels that way. And we can see phone banking irritates everyone. Nobody likes ringing a 1-3 number. We all hate that. So going online is actually much less painful, but you can see that there will be groups of society excluded from that, and it's hard to see those trends really turning around because these pictures, they're solid trends. They're not fads. They're not something that went, oh, all of a sudden everyone's gone to ATMs. That's not going to last. It's kind of lasting. And we're seeing the same thing with shopping on the internet. I was one of those people that said people will never shop on the internet. I was wrong. You know, the shopping experience works and is important sometimes, but shopping on the internet is taken over. Once people overcame their concern and their fear of giving credit card information over the internet, the freedom, the sort of flexibility, the ability to shop for prices and check what you've got and what you haven't got has just meant that this has really taken off. And we're seeing for things like travel, people are increasingly seeing the internet as a better way to find out more information about travel and do that sort of booking. So technology has really changed a whole lot of things and changed them in a way that it's hard to see that it's just going to draw to an end or turn around. So the economy, we've talked about unemployment. Unemployment going down, clearly a beaut thing for the government if that's your KPI doing really well, but it means that we're all busier and we're all having less time to spend. The last 10 years has seen increased and increasing consumer confidence. It's interesting, if Rhonda had asked me to speak a year ago about fads, I wouldn't have thought that the economy was a fad. We were looking at consumer confidence, and normally consumer confidence, it's based on 100. So the thing bounces around 100, and there's all of this sort of magic that sits around 100. If consumer confidence goes below 100, the government will get ousted at the next election, we always say. So there's all of this stuff going on. For 10 years, consumer confidence had just gone up, 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 up. And we were actually looking at it and saying, you know, we need a new baseline. This 100's sort of meaningless. It's like the society has moved on to a new level of confidence. Well, I was wrong again. So anything I say about the future, just ignore it. All I can do is tell you what's happened in the past. But so confidence, the last 10 years has been really everyone's been very confident. And what does that mean? It means that there's a whole generation of people who've never lived in anything but confident good times. Really important. It's not only our children, it's ones a little bit older than that who are sort of running organisations these days. But today consumer confidence is down under 100. So, you know, we're back with this 100 as a reasonable sort of benchmark. We've seen the share market going crazy over the last 10 years, very positive. We've also seen it crash recently. Superannuation. I mentioned earlier that it's changed the way that we view money, the way that we view savings, the way that we view preparedness for the future. And this has had major implications, particularly on things like housing affordability, where housing is no longer just a place where someone lives. Housing is part of this economy where people are borrowing against assets to buy houses, which they're borrowing against to buy shares, which they're borrowing against to buy more houses. So it's a really turbocharged financial mindset that Australia's been in. And it has had huge consequences. So we've seen this massive growth in superannuation, which obviously we needed. We needed to have a major superannuation boom because there were so many people, you know, approaching retirement. But still, it has major implications for society. Now, in terms of politics, this is really interesting. Don't panic. Nobody's going to be tested on the numbers. In terms of politics, you've got Conservative, Liberal on one side and you've got Labor on the other side. This is a mirror image, and what it shows is, you know, when Labor goes up red, the blue bit goes down, that's the Liberal Party. So it's a mirror image of itself. But the first thing you see, even if like me you can't read the words, is that the red is on top for most of the last decade. So for the last decade, I've just said, we've had an increasingly progressive population, and yet we've had a very conservative government in power. And the data shows that for most of that time, the Australian population actually were saying that given an opportunity, they would vote for the Labor Party. So we had this really interesting dynamic going on. And clearly around each election time, there was something to do with border security, to do with an external threat that enabled the dynamic of how people would vote to change. And we can see that sort of scissoring effect. But it's a very important point that Australia was becoming more progressive against this backdrop of a very conservative government. Now, obviously, we have a Labor government, and it'll be interesting to see how does the population respond. I mean, in the last 10 years, we haven't had that situation. And it'll be really interesting to see, was the Australian people just responding, you know, negatively to an existing government, like they should do something different? What will it roll out like over time? Be interesting to see. Now, I mentioned the environment that we'd added to our normal way of viewing the world. Our view is that the environment has now come of age. We see that the vast majority of people actually believe that if we don't act now, it'll all be too late. The environment's a very important thing to worry about. Very few people actually think that environmental concerns are exaggerated. So it's kind of flat. Everyone's agreed that the environment is really important. But then everyone agrees motherhood's really important. What we're seeing now, though, and why I say it's coming of age, is that we're actually starting to see people taking action. So we're actually seeing people thinking about buying a hybrid car, wanting to actually do things themselves. And my own view is that the environment is at the point now where demand, where population's demand or consumer demand to do stuff for the environment is outstripping supply. So I think as a community, we are actually really very ready and willing to engage to do the right thing. But if you think about it, there's not all that much that we can do personally unless it's clear what we ought to do. And this was brought home to me actually in New York. I was in New York at a conference and I just went out to get a glass of water and they passed me a paper cup and had my drink of water, and then I thought, and I said, this is ridiculous. You know, you guys here in America are outrageous. Why don't you have proper glasses? And, you know, and why is there no recycling? and to a T, the people who'd followed me into the tea room said, "We absolutely agree with you. There is this huge demand, but in New York you cannot separate recyclable things from non-recyclable things. So, you know, you're kidding yourself if you have a recycle bin and another one and you know damn well the minute it goes into the rubbish it gets chucked together." So it was the time that I could see that in that area the demand was there but the supply wasn't. Nobody was actually providing the things that people could do. And I think although we're so much more advanced in some areas like that in Australia, I think that in fact the people are wanting to do more, but we're actually not being given the things to do. And there's so much fuss around, you know, solar power, is it the right way to go? You know, if someone would actually say, yes, it's the right way to go, everyone have a look at it, consider it, and here's the way to do it, we'd jump on board. And with many of these things, we're all quite eager to jump on board with these things. Now, those are the big trends. And I think they have huge implications for people, for society, for sort of inclusion and exclusion. If we just think about growing wealth, growing busyness in particular, that sheer amount of time that people are spending working, the growing technology and the growing opportunities for many, there are some really interesting both opportunities and threats. But the other thing to remember is that what I've been talking about, and I know there's a lot of data there, but that's just like national averages. That's all on average. And we all know that the world's not about just averages. We all know that a country can get more affluent because everyone gets a little bit more affluent, or a country can get more affluent because some get really rich and others get left behind. So we really do need to look at those big trends to see where Australia's going, but we also need to be able to dip in and see, well, what about the different sorts of groups? And as Rhonda mentioned, we at Roy Morgan have for many years tried to understand the different groups in society. And, you know, you can break up, you can segment in terms of male, female, old, young, you know, any number of different ways of looking at things. We found consistently a very useful way to look at it is in terms of people's values. Because in fact, you can be very, very poor but still feel in charge of yourself and quite comfortable that you can take charge of things and be in control of the world and even fix things. Or you can be really rich and feel like you're just totally out of control. So there's, you know, it's more about the way you see the world according to the way we view things. And what we look at is we look at these 10 different groups, and there's not time to go through them. But in a nutshell, the top visible achievement and socially aware there on the right are the most affluent. So they are the people who have the most income, better educated, more important jobs, all of those sorts of things. So in terms of a socioeconomic status, these guys are at the top. The visible achievement in terms of their values are all about demonstrating they've made it. So it's the Mercedes, it's the right sort of proof that you've made it. It's about importance. The socially aware, on the other hand, in fact, more buying power, are more on about society, about issues. They are the ones really trying to come to terms with the environmental issues and what we might do. So they're all about causes. And you can see that income's not driving it. It's a whole range of different things underneath it. At the other end, you have on this far left, the basic needs. And these will be people, largely they will be retired people, but they will be people of relatively small means, not necessarily unhappy or dissatisfied or aggressive or any of those things. They're just the, you know, think about the pensioners and the older people. Generally relatively satisfied, but often quite lonely, quite isolated. And then you've got the people at the bottom end, the fairer deal, who are generally the underemployed or unemployed, blue-collar, perhaps long-term unemployed families who are really struggling and who feel they get a real raw deal out of life, who feel that they don't have any access to power within society. And that group is there still. So this group seems to be there. It's a mindset, it's a way of thinking, even when you actually have really good times. So it's not like the feeling that you get a raw deal out of life dissipates when everyone's got a job. You actually have these different groups within society. And it's interesting, we sort of do quite a lot of qualitative work. So you know, we need to listen to all the different groups in society to see how they feel about the world. So one of the important things that we all need to realise is that people actually make choices. The way, what happens is all about the choices that people make. It's not really what the government does, it's the choices that people make. So it's really important that we understand the choices people are likely to make, how they feel about things and how they're going to respond to them. So when we talk to all of these groups about something like technology, I remember the first time we mentioned technology, the Fairer Deal group were saying technology, oh, like robotics and taking over our jobs and we'll lose control. I'm thinking, oh, that's a really interesting perspective. I hadn't thought about that, but yep, I can see that concern. If you talk to the basic needs group about technology, they will think about improved health services, improved medical things, because basically they are the issues for them. They'll think about security systems for their homes. If you talk to youngsters, you know, young teeny boppers about technology, what do they think about? None of those things. It's about music, it's about games, it's about entertainment, you know, turbocharged fun. If you talk to the socially aware, it's about access to information. It's about access to the rest of the world, faster ways of thinking. So you can see the Australia is made up of all of these different kinds of groups. So it's really quite a challenge. But when we looked at the most recent qualitative research, it was in some ways kind of sad, but in some ways really, I think, optimistic. So the basic needs group, when we talk to these older people about the world, about their world and about the way they saw the future, there was a lot coming through in terms of their own concern about how busy everyone was. They were voicing concerns that people didn't have time for their children. They were voicing concerns that they, as grandparents and older grandparents, were trying to jump in, but they were really concerned that the parents of the children weren't spending the time. And then they were voicing concerns for their children, who were the parents, saying, and they don't have time to enjoy themselves. So for them, they were looking very much at what time meant. And the subtext was also, they were saying, and they don't have time for me. So there was that, you know, I felt quite sad hearing that coming through from that group. But on a really positive note, was coming through from the socially aware group was a recognition of some of these major issues and what they mean for society. So they were talking about their own awareness of the major changes happening over the 10 years, the accelerating change. They were talking with concern about this move to everything being needed now, the acceleration of, you know, the now whole thing, and everyone being in a hurry. And, you know, they were voicing this as a concern, and they were looking to do things, you know, how could they actually change that? How could they engage? They were actually raising the fact that they would be able to at least talk to and engage with the people in their own environment. So the point I'm saying is there are these social trends going on. There are these social changes going on. And there are movements like the women's movement that you're not going to stop. But people in society are still people. And people are still looking for ways to engage. And we can operate within these trends in any way that we choose to. So let me just finally finish off by saying, because I'm actually quite optimistic about this. I might have been sad when I first listened to the research. But I am quite optimistic about it because I think that we are now at what I call the crossroads or the convergence of two revolutions. So the first one is the technological revolution, and that's that revolution that's sort of epitomised by Google. Borderless, boundaryless, you've got access to information, anything you like online, you have complete access, you just don't think there are any boundaries, any borders anymore. But the second one is the cultural revolution, and that one is full of borders. It's full of barriers because basically it's a response to this borderless community. It's where people are actually finding and marking off their own territory, whether it's a football team, whether it's a family, whether it's a local community, whether it's a group of butterfly collectors. I mean, what is happening is that people are actually creating their own communities, their own niches. And what technology is allowing is it's actually allowing those spaces to be created far beyond the local physical community. So as well as being able to mix with the people that you live near enough to talk to, it's actually creating these other alternate opportunities for those sorts of communities to evolve. So I'm actually relatively optimistic about where it can all go. That's where I'd like to stop. I'd be happy to hear questions or anyone tell me I'm really wrong, because that's always good fun.